Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Football Writers Podcast, featuring me, Mike Calvin, Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times, and Darren Lewis of the Daily Mirror. This season is, quite literally, at sixes and sevens. Liverpool reasserted their authority by scoring seven at Crystal Palace. Manchester United moved into third by hitting Leeds for six. Now, stop me if you've heard this before, but isn't United a club at odds with itself? Isn't a flawed squad one bad defeat away from another crisis? It feels like the time for what Fleet Street veterans call a reverse ferret. Going into the Christmas and New Year fixtures, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer portrays his team as potential champions. Marcus Rashford says United are one big push away from winning trophies. Ritual optimism? PR platitudes? Or the plain truth? What do you think, Johnny?
I'm enjoying the nostalgia of reverse ferret. I haven't heard that for a while, Mike. I mean, Manchester United have always been in this position. Since I started covering them 20 years ago, I think they've always been on that knife edge as a club in terms of how they're perceived. Fergie used to say that, you know, Manchester United manager was only two defeats from a crisis and three defeats from the sack, no matter how well he was doing. And it's always been thus. So, a few weeks ago, we were saying it was a disaster because they'd gone out of the Champions League in lame fashion. And now they're very much in the mix at the top of the league. Whether they're in the title race, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says, or whether they can really pressure Liverpool, I do have my doubts, because there's something one-dimensional about Manchester United. When they are allowed to play like they did against Leeds, they're fabulous. They've got such creative attack and talent going forward. When the opposition make mistakes and they can pounce on them, absolutely brilliant. But we know where the flaws are. It's in those other games, the games that you need to win titles, where you need to dominate, you need to take the initiative, you need to find different ways to break a team down, that I think, you know, there hasn't been enough sign that they're mastering that art. In fact, I don't think there's been any sign they're mastering that art. And I think they're still, even now, a team in transition. They're a team in transition that at this point has had a good couple of games. But as you allude to, Mike, they could have a bad couple of games and we could be looking at them in a different way.
Yeah, let's do the two-year audit, could we, Darren? Solskjaer, no trophies as yet. Would you say he needs to win one this season at least?
Absolutely. I think if he doesn't win one at least this season, then it is still continued underachievement at Manchester United. I love the fact that, Johnny, you referred to the Sir Alex Ferguson days, because I still think that it's a club mired in the belief that you can weather the storm from outside, because obviously we all know those days when Sir Alex Ferguson was getting it and he stayed and he turned it around. But he had a lot more about him. He was his own man. He had his very clear ideas about the way he wanted to reshape and remodel Manchester United. Solskjaer is a yes man. Solskjaer is a guy who isn't going to challenge the people above him like Mourinho and Van Gaal did. Mourinho obviously walked away, got what he wanted at Spurs and has got them to the top of the league, or challenging, or launching a more realistic challenge for the title than United. And I tell you why Tottenham's is more realistic, Mike. You cannot win the title if you can't win at home. Now, the win at the weekend, Leeds were so naive, they should have been playing in nappies. It was just ridiculous. I think as far as the way that they'd set up against a quick, creative front line at Manchester United was just crazy to the point of negligent. And if you look at Leeds, they are one of only two teams that United have beaten at home. They've been beaten at Old Trafford by Palace, by Spurs, by Arsenal. They've drawn with Chelsea and City. The impressive away form, it just masks so much, both in terms of their results and in terms of the problems at the club. So can they win the league? Not for me. No, not at all, until they can sort out that home form. Until then, if you're doing the two-year audit, Solskjaer's lack of progress is masked by United's position in the league, because I look elsewhere around the Premier League. City, okay, they're having a bad start to the season, but the bedrock of what they're trying to do is seven clean sheets from their last eight. You look at Chelsea, they've solved the gaps they needed to solve in the transfer market with Mendy and Silva. You look at Liverpool and they're a well-oiled machine and they've got an invincible spirit. Something is broken still at United, and I'm not going to be seduced into getting carried away by a big win over an average team.
Well, I'm a sucker for seduction, so I'll actually be the devil's advocate here. Okay, 26 shots, admittedly against the Leeds team, which I reckon should have been in the NBA. 19 points from the last 21 for United. There were signs against Leeds, and okay, it was Leeds. You've got someone like McTominay actually running beyond the forward players for his goals. Now, that's not being United's strength, probably. Does that suggest, I know we talk about them being in transition, but are they learning on the job, as it were, Johnny?
I'm glad you mentioned McTominay, because he's an example of somebody who's, you can see his talent being unlocked yesterday. He's been misportrayed or misconstrued, I think, as a defensive midfielder. The boy with his athleticism, his positivity as a player, can be a fantastic old-fashioned number eight box-to-box man. Now, you're talking about learning on the job. The problem, I think, for United is that there's too many players like that where you get glimpses of what they could be, but they haven't been defined and put into a position that they're going to stick, or they haven't found a midfield combination or a front combination that they stick with and that's convincing. And I hope they can learn, because there's such a great team waiting to get out there, at least there's a great sort of middle to front team waiting to get out there. But they still haven't got those combinations right, and there's still no sign that they're learning what the best combinations are. I think it would help if they had a number nine, a proper number nine, that they could then fit all the other bits and pieces around. Imagine if they had Robert Lewandowski or Harry Kane, then they could actually, you could start to look at where McTominay sits and what you do with Rashford and Martial and so on. So there is a recruitment issue there that they've been left with. There is still potential, and that's why it's so difficult to analyse them, because that's why I said after 2 years they're still in transition. There is all this potential. You feel that they're crying out for just somebody to fit all the bits in the right places and stick with it and get, and I think the home results would come, that thing, consistency would start to come. But Ollie, who I think, Dan says he's a yes man. It's a bit harsh. I know what you're saying, Dan, because he's not a Ferg, he's not a firebrand. He has got a bit of steel about him, I think, but he hasn't shown enough ruthlessness, I have to be honest, in the team selection. He hasn't picked that team and nailed it. And McTominay's an example of a player that there could be a lot more than someone that flits in and out at number six and sometimes plays, sometimes doesn't. And it's time, whether it's Ollie or someone else, it's time they work out what that Manchester United team really looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the aim isn't to sort of deliberately get stuck into Solskjaer per se, but I just think if you are doing that two-year audit, he was seen, to be fair, in a way, by the time it got to the end of Mourinho, it was anyone but Mourinho. He was the perfect antidote to that, because he's a legend of the club, he's very low maintenance, he's fairly self-effacing, But if you look at the bench yesterday, they had Bai, Mata, Pogba, Greenwood, and Matic, and Henderson, obviously. Now, that's a strong bench. It's a strong team. And they demolished Leeds, as we say. And, you know, McTominay is quite a good one because he'd scored 6 goals in his previous 68 appearances. He scored 2 in 3 minutes yesterday because Leeds set up in such a naive way. And it's not his fault. As you rightly say, his potential's been unlocked. But again, you know, you start to get excited about him. And then you think, what will Solskjaer do with him? Because I don't really have a clear idea about what Solskjaer's vision is. I've got a very clear idea about Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea, but I don't really know what Solskjaer's trying to do at United. And over 2 years, that doesn't reflect particularly well.
Well, look, where he should have been stronger, I think, and his recruitment, because he wanted Erling Haaland. Now, you put Erling Haaland in that team, and it's a different team. You know, he wanted Jadon Sancho, he wanted Jude Bellingham, and the Mourinhos or the Fergies or the Klopps, they nail those things down. They go to the board and they fight for them. And Ole hasn't done that. So that is a black mark against him. That is a element where he hasn't fought hard enough for that vision. He's gone with the flow. And then he's been left with someone like Van de Beek, who he doesn't necessarily want, because that's another recruitment decision. Did Ole Gunnar Solskjaer sit there dreaming of having Odion Ighalo and Edison Cavani as his two number nine options? I don't think he did. So, you know, I guess I'm half in and half out of that one. You do make a point, yeah, about the vision and the strength of character there. I think he's got it in him to do it, but he hasn't done it yet. And maybe it's the precariousness of his job. Maybe he's hung in there and hasn't rocked the boat because it's such a precarious job.
Yeah, well, we'll find out more, I suspect, on Boxing Day. First of 3 BT Sport fixtures, Leicester against Manchester United, second against third. Can I just stay with you, Johnny, since Leicester's a club you know well? Do Leicester suffer from almost that snobbishness directed towards provincial, in inverted commas, clubs?
Definitely. I mean, if we're talking about best of the rest at the moment, you know, they're a Leicester right up there in second. And because they're a provincial club and they don't get the coverage that others get, their injury crisis, which has been just as bad as, let's say, Liverpool's, has been completely ignored. You know, they've got to this position, having had to do without Ndidi for a lot of the season, without Soyuncu, without Pereira. Castagne's just come back. Huge players, fundamental players for them. And they got on with things, found solutions, and are where they are. And I think this individual players are underappreciated, but their consistency is underappreciated. You know, since Brendan took over, and certainly since the start of last season, they have been definitely one of the best clubs in the country. They don't have as big a squad, which is probably why they just about lost out last year. But here they are again. You know, after they lost out on the last day of last season, might have expected a negative reaction. They might fall away. They might lose players. But here they are again. And the clearly defined style of football that Darren mentioned, that's there in Leicester. You can see how they play. They're lovely to watch. They've got young players that are developing. I do think that maybe 2015-16 and being a provincial club is what stops them being... If they were West Ham, I mean, how much love do West Ham get from the media when they do well? If Leicester did...
Well, half of Fleet Street supports them.
Well, there you go. I mean, if it was West Ham doing this, my goodness, Brendan would be Sir Brendan Rodgers already.
Speaking of that, Darren, give me your assessment of Brendan Rodgers. You've just come from speaking to Mikel Arteta, of whom more later. You know, it was a pretty obvious knee-jerk response when Arteta was suffering from problems. Oh, well, they'll go and get Brendan Rodgers. Well, it's not as simple as that, is it?
No. I mean, Brendan Rodgers likes to go into a club where there is a plan, a vision. Liverpool had one when he was there. Leicester have one now. It's a very clearly defined structure. Johnny knows more than me. And they have an emphasis on either sourcing talent, as they did with Soyuncu, early, integrating them into the team well, or bringing in young talents like the many they have in the side that are coming to fruition at the moment. And so even though it's quite frustrating being a Leicester fan in some respects, I would imagine, you can see where they are going and you can see why they are going in the directions that they do. I look at some of their form and I just think to myself, and this is the reason why I say it must be quite frustrating, they're in a good position in the league. But if you look at the teams they've lost to, West Ham, Villa, Fulham and Everton, and these are all teams that, okay, with possibly with the exception of Everton, you would expect to see them seeing off. And then you go back to last season when the lockdown was lifted and they were in a great position to seal a Champions League place. And then they blew that too. And it must have been frustrating because the foundations that Rodgers has laid there in such a short space of time do give you cause for optimism. They do leave you feeling we are going in a direction here that is surely going to end up with a return to the Champions League. What do they need? Well, they need more up front. Jamie Vardy scored 13 goals in 15 games, but Iheanacho's only scored one in the Europa League. He hasn't scored any in the Premier League. Cengizunda's only scored one so far this season. Ayoze Perez has only scored once this season. There isn't enough backup, and if they lose Vardy, they're in big trouble. Other players obviously can make goals. They'll grab you the odd goal. But without Vardy still, and you look at Vardy's age, you know, really they should have replaced him or at least brought in somebody that could slot straight in a little while ago. So I still think they're going well. They're a very binary team. They're either win or they lose. They've only drawn once this season. I think that was in the Europa League, if I'm not mistaken. But I just feel like they need teeth. They need consistency. Sorry, consistency is the wrong word, actually, because I think they have been relatively consistent in terms of winning. But I think they need teeth. They need to kind of get this foothold that they've got and see it through. And then I can start to really think about them as the top 14.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there, Darren. Having said all that, though, I can see Vardy and with James Maddison as a number 10, really exposing the weaknesses in that United defence, who, frankly, if I was a United fan, I wouldn't be sleeping too easily.
You're right. Sorry, I was talking big picture. I wasn't necessarily talking about this particular match.
Okay.
I think you're right about that. And I just want one last thing. Solskjaer, when Johnny talks about Solskjaer not being strong enough, what United really needed in the summer was a commanding centre-half, a leader at the back with pace to deal with players who keep getting in behind that Man United back line. If Man United players open as they did yesterday, Vardy and Maddison, as you rightly say, will get in behind them and will score goals. And I can see Leicester, yeah, absolutely. Even though United have that fantastic away run, I can see Leicester getting in behind them, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we all know, don't we, Johnny, that major players are really conscious of their life cycles at particular football clubs. Mo Salah, do you think there's we've got the first signs of an impending divorce with Liverpool? And does it make sense that he should be courting clubs like Real Madrid and Barcelona?
Yeah, I think, are you sort of referring to the interview he did last week, which was...
Yeah, and he doesn't speak very often, does he?
No, he doesn't, no. I mean, he's one of the... He's quicker through the mix zone than he is in the into the penalty area. he's one of them. Yeah, I mean, from a political point of view, it was an interesting, shall we say, bit of timing and bit of content, that interview, to go to the Spanish press before a transfer window and then say something that shows you're maybe not entirely happy where you are is not the most subtle thing, I guess. It's there's a certain point to doing that if you want to move to Barcelona or Real Madrid. I mean, look, a couple of things. I think Salah, in terms of what he said about not being made Liverpool captain in the European game, in the Michelin game, I can see his point, actually. I mean, yes, Trent Alexander got the armband, and that's a just reward for a fabulous young player and local talent. But there's a sense at Liverpool that Salah doesn't get entirely the respect he deserves for me. You know, he's seen as an individual sometimes. The fans love him, but there's still an element that think he should, I don't know, pass more, blah, blah, blah. He has contributed so much to that football club. He's a warrior on the pitch. He takes so many knocks. His availability is unbelievable. He's always fit to play. His assist record's fantastic. So the selfish bit's rubbish. And I think that he's someone that clearly needs. You can see when he gets substituted, he wants it. He wants to be at the centre. And I think Klopp did miss an opportunity to give him the armband. He's led Egypt brilliantly, and he probably should have done then. Maybe that adds to a few feelings that he's got. But he's always also wanted to get to the very top in his career. A hugely ambitious person, which you can see oozing out of him every time he plays. And, you know, we do know that Real Madrid and Barcelona, for non-British players, but maybe even for young British players now as well, represent the pinnacle of football. So it's not a surprise if he has thoughts in that direction. And then you add in Diogo Jota's signing, which he's been brilliant this season, but that actually seemed to be a signing for the future at the time, to ensure Liverpool against losing somebody from the front line. So that's a long way of saying, yes, I could see him going to Real Madrid or Barcelona at some point soon. If they can afford him, that's a big issue.
Yeah. Well, Liverpool, Darren, they've got manageable holiday games, West Brom and Newcastle. If they do go on to win the title, would that count, do you think, as Klopp's greatest achievement?
Not his greatest. I think winning the title after 30 years will always be his greatest, but it'll be one of the finest performances in recent seasons, given what they've had to contend with. And given that everybody, myself included, believed that the bedrock of their defensive stability was Virgil van Dijk. But clearly there is a collective mentality at the club that has enabled them to get past that. And you know, to go to a place like Palace, I was at Palace last weekend when they held Spurs, came from behind, so to do, and they'd been on a good run. That was their third unbeaten in the game. I think they beat West Brom 5 away from home. And Roy Hodgson's very conservative in the way he sets up against supposedly superior opposition. But they were in good shape. So for Liverpool to go there and do what they did was hugely impressive. And I just think overall, for Liverpool to get back to the top, given what they've had to contend with in this first half of the season, massively important going into Christmas, because as you probably know, for the last 5 seasons, the team top at Christmas has gone on to win the league. And in 9 of the last 11 seasons, that's been the case as well. So, yeah, I think for me, if he were to get top, he's top already. If he were to stay top, I actually even think to get there now, it is outstanding when you consider, you know, Chelsea spent hugely to have a go. Mourinho's there believing he could have a go. Everyone tipped City, despite what Liverpool did last season. Everyone tipped City, didn't they, to win the league? And Liverpool have just risen above them all. Again, they've shot their way out of trouble in many times, on many occasions. And yeah, I'm already sold. But I think if he were to get another title in the circumstances he's had to contend with, even if you just sort of, apart from all of the other issues, injuries, COVID, fixture congestion, you've got to put in brackets egos as well. and he's managed to deal with those too.
You, Darren, you know, can I stay with you on this one? You talked about Spurs earlier on in the show about being still potential champions, but surely haven't they missed their chance in what's looking a pretty fateful week? You know, that draw that you saw against Palace, defeat at Anfield, Liverpool's contrasting performance against Palace, and then another defeat.
Well, I saw a terrific tweet by a colleague of ours, Jonathan Liu, who said that he was quite amused at the fact that the mere notion of a title challenge was enough to end Tottenham's title challenge, which was
very good.
A brilliant tweet. Very, very good, as only Johnny can sum things up. I don't think they've missed their chance, because this season has so many twists and turns, and my jaw hit the floor driving back from Palace on that day when I saw that Liverpool had been held at Fulham. And that's the thing about this Premier League season. You never can hang your hat on any particular fixture going the way you think it will go. But I do think it is the reason why Mourinho started to try and get under the skin of Jurgen Klopp with these barbs about his conduct on the touchline. Whether you believe he has a point or not, it's one of a number of things that he's tried to do. The best team lost, you know, you knock yourself out kind of thing. I think Mourinho has in mind the return fixture between the two teams, Liverpool and Spurs, on January the 26th, I think it is, in London, because he sees that as an opportunity to take 3 points off Liverpool. The problem is, to put himself in a position to take advantage of that, you've got to beat what's put in front of you at home. And I was really shocked, not just at the way that they couldn't break Leicester down, but also by the lack of impact that Gareth Bale had when he came on in the second half. That was quite alarming for me. And I think that might be a conundrum that Mourinho needs to solve if they are going to continue punching their way at the top.
Okay, let's look at Manchester City, if we could please, Johnny. They're at home to Newcastle on Boxing Day evening, another BT Sport game. Do you expect them to be major players in January? If you look at it, Dortmund are beset by all sorts of problems at the moment. Do you think they're vulnerable to an approach for Haaland?
I think they are. And I think City is a natural destination for him, given his, I think he supported them as a kid, and given his family history. And I mentioned Manchester United needing a number nine post Aguero, and I think we are starting to ease into post Aguero with his chronic knee problems. City need the same, and I think Haaland would have a transformative effect on them. A fabulous option. I think they will go from whether it's something to execute in January or in the summer. I'm not entirely sure. Because it still will be hard to get anyone out of Dortmund in January. I mean, there's a Jadon Sancho situation as well, but I don't think City's a destination for him. And of course, there's Lionel Messi, which that dream hasn't entirely died for City. But I do think that with Laporta standing for election again and making signs that he would keep Messi, that one might just never come off. So yes, I think Haaland will be the natural one for City. And they are in a rebuilding phase. The way their season's sort of stabilising and starting to improve while they're in this period of transition, I think might be quite encouraging, because I think next season you'll see something much more like the Manchester City of Pep Guardiola with a few more signings. And that programme, Mike, as you allude to, will either it'll be starting now, whether the signings come in January or the summer. This will be a phase I think they'll recruit.
Yeah. You know, sometimes talent from within, it withers and then blooms again. Let's look at the re-emergence, if we could please, Darren, of John Stones. Seems to reflect really well on him personally and professionally. He's even being talked about an England recall. Is that a bit too premature?
Not really. I think that I was at a game at Southampton on Saturday, and to put his performance into context, Southampton had scored on 19 of their previous 20 games, and Stones was very solid. To be perfectly fair, Southampton did miss a couple of opportunities from set pieces that they should have taken. But at the same time, Stones was very composed. He looks to have had some time in the gym. And after the match, we were asking Pep about it, and Pep was gushing and said his improvement was all down to him. He looked at all areas of his game, his life, and let's not kid ourselves, there were elements of his private life that were being played out in newspapers on a Sunday that weren't particularly, I would imagine, pleasing for him. But he has put that all to one side and appears to have regained his focus. And listen, if there is an area of England's team that needs competition desperately, it's centre half, because I think we're less convincing at centre half with England than a health secretary crying on TV. I think that if Stones will look at that and think to himself, I've got every chance of breaking into an England starting position if I can continue doing well with City.
Okay, let's look at Everton, Johnny, if we could. They're playing also on Boxing Day Eve, same time, 8 o'clock, at Sheffield United. It's a year now since Carlo Ancelotti turned up at Goodison, took the job on the rebound from Napoli. And there was a bit of a misconception around, wasn't it, that you thought, OK, it's another pension plan appointment. What do you think the lessons of his first year at Goodison have been?
How very good a manager he is. And how we did get him wrong, or not we, because I didn't see him that way, but some people did get him wrong. They saw him as a Hollywood manager. He only does the big clubs, forgetting his roots, which was, you know, the likes of Parma in Italy. And if you've met Ancelotti, and Darren will have done like me, you realise he's a humble, down-to-earth, proper football guy, and he's really got stuck into Everton. He's really understood what the club's about. The first thing he did was made them hard to beat and stabilised them again. He's made appropriate Everton signings. You know, Allen's been a tremendous signing, as has Doucouré, very Evertonish midfield players. Built a beautifully balanced team, and what's impressive at the moment is they're on a good surge of form, despite injuries to the likes of James, to Luca Dean, and to now Allen himself. And you just see a craftsman at work, a master at work, continuing, and I'd expect him to continue improving that football club. It's very open in the top four, and they're capable of it. He said that at the weekend, and I think he's not a man prone to hyperbole. If he thinks that they can be top four, I think they can be top four. You should listen to him and trust him.
Yeah, you've got Ben Godfrey there, haven't you? You know, emerging as a defender of real potential.
Yeah. I mean, that's brilliant. The way he's got Godfrey and Holgate playing at fullback and playing brilliantly. And Godfrey, in particular, you know, of all the Norwich talents, he was probably the least heralded. It was all about Cantwell and Lewis and Aarons, but actually Godfrey just looks like he could play anywhere across the back line, and a tremendous athlete, learning his football well under Ancelotti.
Yeah, I've seen him play midfield as well. He was quite handy there. Actually, you know, they are playing Sheffield United, Darren, and you know, we do probably overemphasize managerial significance. Are they in the situation that relegation is almost a self-fulfilling prophecy now? And obviously that would point out the very small margins in success or failure. But Chris Wilder himself, rationally, you've got to look at this and say, well, he'll be the best manager to get them back up again. Does rationality have any place in football?
Sadly not. We work in an industry where we all know that owners see the bottom line. You know, West Brom have sacked Bilic because they want the riches of the top division, and also because they see that statistics are there to be ripped up. A couple of things fascinate me about Sheffield United. We all know the work that Chris Wilder's done. We all know that the spirit that he's managed to engender within his squad. But I am fascinated with his handling of Rian Brewster, because if you spend that much money on a striker, I don't understand why you wouldn't play him. We know that Brewster's a very promising striker. We know that he's a very level-headed young man. We also know that Sheffield United aren't scoring enough goals. So something is seriously wrong if he's not starting football matches. And I think, on the one hand, you would absolutely have sympathy for Wilder. And I think none of us are prone to the sort of pushing for a knee jerk. They're losing, so throw him overboard and forget everything that he's done in the past. But if you're losing, if you're in, you know, if you're drowning and someone's, you know, potentially got the rope that you could hang on to, and metaphorically speaking, that's what Brewster's goals could provide for Sheffield United. Well, why would you not take that option? So I am very, very fascinated as to why that remains the elephant in the room. I know he started yesterday, but he came off shortly after half time. Again, that suggests to me something. He cannot possibly be happy with that. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, John.
In fact, I'm as baffled as you are, Darren. I thought it was a good signing because they picked up a potential number nine, reliable Premier League scorer, a real good talent for 20 million quid. And I do get the impression Sheffield United is one of those teams where you have to fit in. It's like a Burnley in the sense that you have to 100% fit into the manager's kind of very rigidly defined way of playing, and maybe with Brewster, there's going to be a long period of trying to get him to do that. But, you know, part of growing as a club and as a manager would be to try and broaden out and be able to have slightly different players. You know, Brewster's a very talented finisher who should be allowed to focus on being a number nine and finishing. And at the bottom of the league with a talent like that, and you're playing, and apologies to Ollie Burke, but as a fellow Scotsman, I think I can maybe say it, you can't be playing Ollie Burke ahead of Rian Brewster.
Can I just add to that as well? I remember when Sam Allardyce was at Sunderland, and he wasn't playing Jermaine Defoe because Jermaine wasn't the big striker that held up the ball or who could get on the end of set pieces that he wanted. And I remember talking to Jermaine at the time, and he was very frustrated at not getting into the side because he said, I might not be his typical kind of guy, but if he puts me in, I can score goals. And that's exactly what Defoe did once he did. And sometimes there is a lot to be said about adapting to the circumstances in which you find yourself. And if you've got Brewster, it doesn't help your case or to make the case for you if you're turning down the option to play a striker that many other clubs in and around that area would have taken, bitten your hand off for.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Johnny, about the Burnley comparison. I think that's very, very strong and probably points up how difficult it is to change the collective culture of a team or a club. And that's where I just can't see the Sam Allardyce appointment working for West Brom. I think they'll go down. Yeah, I'd just like to end, if we could, Chelsea at Arsenal on Boxing Day on what I think we should probably call the David Luiz derby. Start with Chelsea, if we could, Johnny. Bit of a wobble. What do you think success this season is going to look like for Frank Lampard? I suppose what I'm asking you is, what would it take for him to keep his job?
He could do with winning something. They probably should win something, given the investment, and he certainly needs to finish in the top four. But I've been impressed with how he's moulded all the talents, how he's growing the team, how he's improved the defending. These are good signs of progress, but this is Chelsea, so you know the owner doesn't necessarily sit down and take a rational look at underlying signs of progress. They, after a couple of years, they lose. You know, Roman loses patience and looks at the bottom line. He probably needs to win, Frank. But I think he's doing well. I think he's got it. They're going to have blips. I hope he keeps the job. You can probably hear the slight resignation. I've had a fear. I think you asked me a while ago, Mike, and I start last season, who was more vulnerable, Solskjaer or Lampard? And I think I said Lampard back then. And I kind of feel that's probably still the case in some ways because of the Roman factor. But he's doing a good job.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, Darren, you've just come from speaking to Mikel Arteta. What would the impact of another home defeat on Boxing Day mean?
Arsenal's a very feeble fan base. We know that from their fans' TV station, from which rival fans take great delight after matches. Start the car kind of thing. And so if they were to lose, I mean, you have to look at the context of the previous home defeats. Wolves had won there for the first time since the 70s. Burnley had won there for the first time since the 70s. Villa had gone there and won 3-0 in a result that really did raise eyebrows. Southampton could have won there for the first time since the late 80s. I saw that game and I think Southampton were very safety first, and we asked Hasenhüttl about it afterwards and he just said, I was too worried about what they could have done to us on the counter-attack. But I read your match report, Johnny, of the Everton game and you described very accurately Arsenal style of players, please don't hurt me football. I kind of hoped I had thought of that line first, so damn you. But you look at the numbers, you know, and I think they've scored 13 goals all season in the league. Only the bottom three have scored fewer goals. They've got 14 points represents their worst start to the season since the 74-75 campaign. And this morning's press conference, it just followed a pattern that all of us, having covered clubs and managers, have seen before, where a club's on a horrendous run and a manager says, we're all pulling in the same direction. I want to see fighters, and all of the usual rhetoric But then you look at the performances and they say one thing. You don't have a dressing room that is fighting for the manager. And I think another defeat to a Chelsea that have given two of their worst players to... Actually, that's not fair because Willian was excellent last season. But David Luiz in pre-season last year was off the boil. And after a game in Munich, I was there. He spoke to me and two other journalists who were covering it. And he said, look, we might have the transfer ban and we might have this and that problem, but we're Chelsea and we're going to get through this. And we've got the spirit and the players. And a week later, he was at Arsenal. You've been a lovely audience today, by the way. but that, in a way, that's my point, because all of us raised issues about giving a long-term deal to Willian, however good he was last season. A, given his age, and B, given the fact that you've laid off 55 members of staff, and the optics were bad, the long-term thinking wasn't great, but they went with it. And you know, Willian's now one of their worst performing players this season. And, you know, again, Johnny, you saw them at the weekend. I'm sure you could probably add to all of that.
Yeah, they were passive. They were very mediocre. And they look like... we've seen it, you know, as you say, Dan, we've seen the press conference situation before. We've seen performances like this before from a team that's in this kind of rut where they're just afraid to make mistakes. That's what really struck me. They sat behind the ball. They tried to play really percentage passes. They were terrified to even press properly in case they were caught out of position. And you just don't win in sport by sitting there and hoping for the best and hoping nothing bad happens to you, because the other team will take the initiative and punish you, which is what happened. And this isn't a blip. This has been the case since the start of the season. The thing that's probably keeping Arteta alive is that above him there's a mess. There's not enough authority or a vision of somebody that really knows what the football club should look like, and so he's staying. And that's not me calling for Arteta's head. He's a young manager, and he's shown some very good signs at the start of his reign. He could be a success if there was somebody above him helping, perhaps to define what it needs to look like, define a way forward. That looks too much for him at the moment, as well as learning on the job as a coach. And they're in a fearful position. They're in real trouble this season.
Yeah, sacking a manager is an admission of failure. It's usually a transparent attempt to shift the blame by people who are not as good at their job as the man they're seeking to replace. Not so long ago, I would have scoffed at the idea of Arsenal serving up another sacrificial victim. But now I'm not so sure. That says it all, doesn't it? Thanks to Darren and Johnny for their thoughts, and to you for listening to the Football Writers Podcast. We send you our best wishes for Christmas.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time.
The world's best converting checkout.
Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.